Hello, Texas, America, and the world. This is Mark Dankoff coming to you live from an undisclosed location in South Texas, doing all kinds of things to shore up my own situation on this Friday afternoon as it relates to getting myself some different wheels from the ones I've been driving in the last 10 years. And at this particular juncture, I'm involved in the same kinds of negotiations that are apparently going on between Trump and Putin. Leaving out all the parties that should not be involved in a negotiation, getting down to some really good things that will enable me to at least make it around San Antonio without breaking down on Interstate 410 or 281 every 5 minutes. So that's basically what I'm about this afternoon. Have some things to report to you, certainly before we get into our main stories. And RT is reporting, of course, in their headline, if you're looking at RT.com right now, that Trump is, as they put it, ejecting from the Ukrainian joyride while the EU is in the back seat kicking and screaming. That all sounds very good until you go down a few stories later and discover that Pete Hegseth, our Temple Mount defense secretary, is basically indicating that the Pentagon has not ruled out nuclear weapons for Ukraine, that Donald Trump will be making the final decision on that. I've got news for Mr. Trump. If that is seriously something that he's considering, he is totally out of his mind at that juncture. If you're going to get off of this Ukrainian joyride, leave the EU and Globo Homo in the backseat kicking and screaming, or with Ted Kennedy behind the wheel going over a bridge, you can't possibly be talking about nuclear weapons for Ukraine. That's an insane idea. That is something that would seem to me that the defense secretary should have said was off the table from day one or from minute one in regard to these conversations now taking place apparently unilaterally between the president of the United States and President Putin of Russia. But certainly keeping Zelensky out of this nonsense and keeping a bunch of these global homo people in the EU out of these conversations is all to the good. So we obviously can't report to you anything responsible at this juncture, these conversations between Putin and Trump, because nothing has been made public on that. But it seems to me, once again, that Mr. Trump needs to understand that he needs to say, truthfully, that this coup d'etat in 2014 was not of his making. This orange revolution that was taking place, or an attempt at that, in Ukraine in the 2003 to 2005 time frame was not of his making. Mr. Trump needs to say that putting $200 billion-plus in American and EU money into this hole known as Vladimir Zelensky's Ukraine was not of his doing, and that he wants to rebuild America by getting out of a foreign war that is not only not in this country's interests, but where we picked the wrong side and forced Vladimir Putin to do what he had to do in order to avoid this ongoing encroachment in his backyard by these constant NATO expansions. And where Mr. Trump, of course, at the same time, hopefully will make some degree of progress in this whole issue of NATO itself. In the roadmap, we're going to post again David Stockman's very fine article on how to get the United States out of NATO, period, and how it is that the United States has no business continuing any longer in that ludicrous organization which is not defending Western Europe from a Soviet attack. That era is gone. This is all about the North Atlantic Treaty Organization showing up in places other than the North Atlantic, no longer having 12 members, but 31, I believe, as we speak. Where the North Atlantic Treaty Organization is not a defensive organization, it is on offense for the New World Order and for global world government and stealing other nations' sovereignties and subverting their cultures, blackmailing them militarily. And the beauty is, with Vladimir Putin and Russia, this has not worked. The water level is rising for NATO, and for those of us who truly believe in America first, that's all good news. So, Mr. Trump, use this opportunity to get the United States out of Ukraine, period. Hand this thing over to the Russians with no strings attached and stop talking about making a deal with Zelensky that involves a trade in terms of raw materials and resources. The Russians already control 70% of them. And in this particular case, all of the lithium and titanium that exists in that country. And the Russians are continuing to expand westward. Take a look at this whole contact line of approximately 1,000 kilometers going all the way from the Kupiansk region all the way into Zaporozhye. And you'll discover that the Russians are straightening out that contact line as they continue to make advances in the center part of that contact line and making arrangements eventually to take Slavyansk and Kramatorsk through a series of maneuvers that will eventually allow them to encircle Kramatorsk. And at that point, it's all over. Take a look at airstrikes as well, folks. I don't know how many of you have the opportunity to follow these non-Western sources, reliable non-Western sources, on the magnitude of these airstrikes taking place as we speak over Ukraine. It is absolutely comprehensive. I'd like to get an aviation opinion on this from someone who has been in the business of dropping ordnance on another country to get some sort of perspective as to exactly what this compares to in regard to aviation mass attacks of the past. But it does not matter what portion of Ukraine you're looking at this juncture, the Russians are hitting it. And they are hitting electrical supply sources. They are hitting military logistical warehouses. They have been engaged in some amazing strikes over Kyiv itself. And I have seen and have witnessed some of these in the last 7 days as I review all these videos from foreign sources that are sent to me. The long and the short of it is, it's not a question of who's going to win this war. The Russians have won it. It's a question of whether or not Global Homo finally throws in the towel and acknowledges that they've lost. And this brings us to a very, very important editorial that was in RT yesterday, which talked about this very thing. Putin and Trump have a very unique negotiation going on. Putin has all the cards. He has military victory, comprehensive and final military victory within his grasp. Day by day, these advances continue on the part of his conventional forces to the west. Day by day and night by night, these airstrikes are going to continue. It's all over. And so we have a situation, for example, in terms of Volodymyr Zelensky's incursion into the Kursk region of Russia. The last time I checked the casualty figures, they had had 57,000 men killed just in the Kursk region alone. This can't continue much longer. And at this particular point, Mr. Trump, figure a way to get us the hell out of this. Don't sink another dime into it. And allow the Russians to take what is rightfully theirs and to lay the whole thing at the doorstep of the people who started this. Victoria Nuland and Robert Kagan, Barack Obama, Hillary Clinton, Joe Biden, all of the rest of these folks that were responsible for what happened, were responsible for the coup d'etat, were responsible for the billions, not millions, but billions of dollars that were sunk into this horrible effort in Ukraine, where we found ourselves not only getting a bunch of Ukrainians killed, many times that, the number of Russians who lost their lives, but where Zelensky has now not stood for election in quite some time. He's an unelected president. He has abolished his political opposition. He has been involved in unspeakable crimes against the Russian Orthodox Church that remind us of the Synagogue of Satan warning of Jesus Christ to the churches of Smyrna and Philadelphia in the second and third chapters of John's Apocalypse on Patmos. This is the type of guy we are backing, and the crimes of his military intelligence unit under Budanov are absolutely reprehensible, including all of these assassinations, which include the heinous murder of Alexander Dugin's daughter in Moscow almost 3 years ago now. This is the caliber of individual that we are dealing with, and we need to remind ourselves that none of these crimes would have been possible without the crimes, and I emphasize the crimes, of the American political elite that was involved in this Orange Revolution of years ago, and somewhere in the 2005 timeframe, that subsequently overthrew the legitimately elected government of that country in February of 2014, and then proceeded to support that government in military activities against Russian ethnics in the Donbass, who wanted no part of being led by what was essentially a CIA-backed government and a CIA-installed government in Kiev. So some 17,000 Russian ethnics lost their lives in Donbass, and we found ourselves in a situation, of course, where as this whole thing continued to evolve, Vladimir Putin made the mistake of trusting the West and trusting that the so-called Minsk Accords would result in a legitimate settlement in that country that would have ensured that Ukraine did not join NATO, that they would be demilitarized and denazified, and that you would have a situation where Minsk would finally settle this thing once and for all without the heinous loss of life that we have suffered since. And in this regard, we need to remind ourselves that what Dmitry Medvedev has been saying is absolutely factual. The Minsk Accords, and this is according to Angela Merkel of Germany, who would know. This is according to the ex-president of France, François Hollande, whom we know. That the Minsk Accords were nothing more than a fraudulent buying of time. The West never had any intention of abiding by those accords and the agreements thereof. It was all designed to fool the Russians into believing that there was a deal at the same time that the West began arming the Ukrainians and arming a regime that was illegitimate. And now that we have poured billions into this situation, now that the European economies are going down the tube as a result of what they have done to themselves and denying themselves access to cheap Russian energy sources, now that we have ourselves in a situation, of course, where this particular conflict has accelerated the de-dollarization of the global economy and is putting the United States in a circumstance of weakness that it has not been in since the end of the Second World War, when it was the big kid on the block, we've got to make a deal now. And that deal is simply a deal to get out of that country, to pull all of our people out of there, to stop spending even 1 cent on this bum in Kiev, and start talking about a world without NATO, and a world without foreign interventions, and a world where we can begin spending American money on Americans, solidify our southern border, cram all of these Mexican and Venezuelan in El Salvadorian drug cartels into barrels in Miami and float them out to sea and begin to start over again in terms of rebuilding our political, our military, and our economic and physical infrastructure in this country to defend this country and to revitalize our economy and to stay out of other people's business where we don't belong. How many times do we have to repeat this? Mr. Trump, on the one hand, has said some very good things about what he hopes to do in ending this conflict in the Ukraine, chiefly the responsibility and the fault of the United States and the European Union and NATO. And yet we have Pete Hegseth, on the other hand, not ruling out the possibility that in these negotiations, Mr. Trump might actually consider giving Ukraine nuclear weapons. What are you talking about, Mr. Trump, or what is your defense secretary talking about? Let's get to the bottom of that really soon. So that's where we are in terms of the Russian-Ukrainian war. By the way, if you haven't noticed this in recent times, activities continue in Iran. I am convinced that they're convinced that they're going to be attacked by the United States and or Israel sometime this year. I've been seeing all kinds of film footage of what they are doing in underground bunkers in that country and the advances that they are allegedly making with their own air defense missiles. But perhaps the most interesting thing that I saw today in regard to a film report that you're going to see nowhere in Western media is the fact that the heavy cargo plane traffic between Moscow and Tehran has increased to levels perhaps not seen before. What's inside those big cargo planes? What are the Russians bringing into Iran? What is it that has really been going on in conversations between the Russian political leadership and the Iranian? I think that they are clearly banking on the very sort of thing that I think is likely to happen, which is a horrible scenario, and that is that Donald Trump and Netanyahu and people like Hegseth will drag the United States into a conflict in the Middle East, dealing with Gaza and the West Bank and southern Lebanon and Syria, with Iran being the big prize, or so these people think. And that even if the Russian-Ukrainian conflict should be legitimately settled once and for all, and that's an if, folks, we don't know for one minute yet what it is that Trump is going to come up with Putin that will absolutely be acceptable to the Russian side. But there is something that we do know, and that is that the ultimate threat of a global war is not likely to be over Ukraine, although it could ignite. It is likely, very likely to be in the Middle East, and specifically over this whole question of Zionism and Gaza and the occupied territories, these ongoing Israeli expansions, which would clearly suggest, whether you're talking about southern Lebanon or you're talking about what the Israelis have been up to in Syria since the HTS brand of government took over that country in the wake of President Assad's departure. This all points to the very thing that they are being at least more open in talking about now, and that is this nonsense of greater Israel. I'm going to be spending a lot of time on this show today in dealing with an article that is blessedly online. Dr. E. Michael Jones of Culture Wars has been very, very gracious in recent times in posting things online that are available to you and me. For those of us who are not getting the print subscription to Culture Wars, I happen to get the print subscription, and from that I go into Dr. Jones' own website, and I discover that some very, very important things are available to you that are in the roadmap. After we listen to Eddie Arnold here for a little bit, deal with an RBN break, I'm going to get into this article in the current Culture Wars by Dr. Robertson Jenness, Prophecy, the Jews, and the Antichrist, Part 1. Stay tuned.
I'm so excited to have you as part of the Wild Pastures family, and we look forward to bringing you the pasture-raised meats that you and your family will love. Now, we started Wild Pastures because so many of my clients would tell me they just couldn't find high-quality pasture-raised meats, and even when they did, it was so expensive that they couldn't afford to eat it regularly. Now, I'm not talking about the bottom-of-the-barrel healthy meats that have claims like natural or free-range or even cage-free, terms that were actually created by the industrial food industry to make us feel all warm and fuzzy about buying their low quality products. I'm talking about truly nourishing pasture-raised meats, the kind that you'll never really find in a grocery store. Our farmers are doing things beyond organic. Our beef is 100% grass-fed and grass-finished and raised on pastures free from chemicals and other pesticides. Our chickens are 100% pasture-raised, where they get their natural diet of grass and forage and insects. We will never settle for free range, which is actually one of the most deceptive terms in the chicken industry. In fact, less than 0.1% of the chicken consumed in the United States is truly pasture-raised in the way that ours is. And our pork is 100% pasture-raised as well. So if you care about where your food comes from, then you have definitely made it to the right place. As a Wild Pastures member, you'll be supporting the most highly principled farmers in America and getting the most nutrient-dense, nourishing, and sustainable meats in the world. But I'm confident you'll love being part of our mission at Wild Pastures, and you will really love the delicious, nourishing meats that we're going to deliver straight to your door.
Visit republicbroadcasting.org and click the Wild Pastures banner ad. Secure a shipment today. Beef, poultry, and pork. Raised the way nature intended.
Tahibo Tea Club's original Pure Paudi Arco Super Tea comes from the only tree in the world that fungus does not grow on. As a result, it naturally has antifungal, anti-infection, antiviral, antibacterial, anti-inflammation, and anti-parasite properties. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The tea is also organic and naturally caffeine-free. A one-pound package of tea is $49.95, which includes shipping. To order, please visit drinksupertea.com. The first word is drink, spelled D-R-I-N-K, then the word super, then the word tea. The complete website is drinksupertea.com. Or call us at 818-965-9113, Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. California time. That's 818-965-9113. DrinkSuperTea.com.
I can't hold it on the road when you're sitting right beside me and I'm drunk out of my mind merely from the fact that you are here. And I have not been known as the saint of San Joaquin, and I'd just as soon right now pull on over to this side of the road and show you what I mean. La-da-da-da-da-da-da. La-da-da-da-da-da-da. July, you're a woman more than anyone I've ever known. And I can't hold my eyes on the white line out before me.
We are back. You have been listening to Eddie Arnold in July, You're a Woman from his 1970 RCA album, Standing Alone. You know, my parents loved Eddie Arnold. I loved Eddie Arnold. I know that many listeners to this network undoubtedly have owned his records for many years gone by. My mother never particularly liked that cut, July, You're a Woman. She said, I just can't see Eddie Arnold driving down a highway, maybe with a convertible and a young woman next to him, and just kind of, I don't know, she said, that seems like that's something a rock star would be doing. But at any rate, that was a very, very innovative album for Eddie Arnold. Lee Greenwood produced that album, where they kind of merged Eddie's style with that of maybe John Denver and Gordon Lightfoot in particular. But that album is still being sold, by the way, by the Bear Family Records people in Germany. You can find all kinds of out-of-print records that they sell legally, have gotten rights of one sort or another to sell them. And that particular album, I believe, is available through those folks at Bear Family Records over in Germany. They didn't ask me to plug that. I was just mentioning that as a part of the story. Let's get back to where we are, folks. We have covered what I think are the most important things from the Russian-Ukrainian conflict. I will be adding all kinds of things to your roadmap over the weekend related to airstrikes and troop movements, certainly related to whatever diplomatic conversations may yet emerge from the darkness of the back rooms between Mr. Trump and Mr. Putin. Let's hope that Mr. Hegseth decides that this notion of putting nuclear weaponry into Ukraine is something that was simply designed to give major world media a curveball and to kind of play around with Zelensky's mind here a little bit. Let's hope that that's all that's involved. But when we get into something that I absolutely think is important for all of the listeners, it is the current February 2025 issue of Dr. E. Michael Jones' Culture Wars. That is a traditional Roman Catholic publication, by the way. They know I'm not a Roman Catholic, but from time to time, I'm on some of their shows. They have, including Dr. Syngenis, Robert Syngenis, the author of this article I'm going to make reference to on this broadcast. He's been on my show in the past, always does a bang-up job. And I would be the first to tell you that in terms of activism, the right kind of political activism coming from Christians who understand their theology, I think, correctly, the traditionalist Catholics outdo most of the rest of us, including my tradition, the Lutheran Church, in getting into the sorts of things that you tend not to read or hear anyplace else that should be a part of wider discussion. In the Lutheran and Reformed churches, certainly, that should be a part of wider discussion in Bible classes, particularly at this hour in history. And yet it's so hard to find the information intelligently discussed that we need, which is why you don't have to be a Roman Catholic to subscribe to Culture Wars, and why I know people like E. Michael Jones and Dr. Robert Syngenis. These are top-notch people that have kept me informed on things that I otherwise would not be able to inform you of. So before we jump into this article just for a little bit, because it's comprehensive enough that there's no way that we can cover it in the last half hour of this show, but I'm going to read at least some excerpts from it. But it's online. It's a part of your roadmap that will be posted with this show after the fact, so you will be able to get into it on your own and share it with your family members and friends. You don't have to be a Roman Catholic, folks, to see where this is headed and where I believe this is headed under Mr. Trump. We'll see what he does with Russia and Ukraine, but this whole issue of the Middle East, prophecy, the Jews and the Antichrist, this whole business of Hegseth's connections to the Temple Mount movement, this ongoing idiocy that these people talk about from time to time in terms of attacking Iran, this has nothing to do with, in my view, biblical Christianity or political sanity either. But nonetheless, we have too many people in the top leadership positions in the United States who actually believe this sort of thing and who are prepared to act on it. Is Mr. Trump one of them? We'll find out after Eddie Arnold with Make the World Go Away. We'll make reference after this short break on this broadcast to the Soleimani assassination, which Mr. Trump commissioned a few years ago. Where's he going to take us this time? We'll be back.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
What would you say if I told you we have a new tool that will increase production and lower maintenance costs for your meat processing company, and it would pay for itself in just 6 weeks?
When pigs fly!
The new EaseOff Model EZ4 replaces old spring-style carcass droppers and is faster, safer, and more reliable. The EaseOff lowers or lifts 1,000 pounds to or from your rail automatically using our remote control.
Sounds expensive! Can I afford it?
Can you afford not to try the EaseOff? it installs fast with just 3 bolts in place of your current dropper. The effortless operation will reduce fatigue and injuries, speed up your line, eliminate downtime, and increase profit.
How can I order my Ease Off?
Go to easeoff.com, EAZEOFF.com, and hurry, because we are offering $200 off on the new Easy 4 for a limited time. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too. EaseOff LLC. Summersville, Missouri. 417-932-6419.
People often write to tell us what has happened for them since starting Extendivite. Allow me to read one. This product has been a godsend for my father, who suffered from a heart attack about 2 years ago. He was prescribed medications for his condition, which was so serious, he almost died. But he hasn't been able to afford most of the medications. After researching alternatives that were more affordable, he tried Extendivite. Since taking it, he has consistently lower blood pressure and experiences less angina. We are currently on our 5th bottle. I enthusiastically recommend this product, and I am grateful that it is available. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit extendivite.com. That's extendivite.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Well, hello, folks. This is Mike Gatti, the Rebel Madman at Republic Broadcasting Network. If you are searching for your inner rebel, it can be found at the Dixie Republic. It's the world's largest Confederate store, located in Travelers Rest, South Carolina. The anti-white, anti-Christ, anti-Southern world ends at the asphalt. Welcome to God's country. Log on to thedixierepublic.com to view all of their Southern merchandise, from flags to t-shirts to artwork. At the store, browse through their extensive collection of belt buckles and have a custom-made leather belt handcrafted in their Johnny Reb gun and leather shop. Now remember, DixieRepublic.com, where you can meet all of your Southern needs.
Their face is gaunt, their eyes were blurred, and shirts all soaked with sweat. They're riding hard to catch that herd, but they ain't caught them yet. Cause they got to ride forever on that range up in the sky, on horses snorting fire, as they ride on, hear their cry.
Yippee-yi-yo, yippee-yi-yo,
the Ghost Rider's in the sky.
We are back. You are listening to the Dankoff Report on RBN Live on Valentine's Day. None of you have sent me a Valentine, which is okay, because at least I'm not getting my usual level of hate mail. So this particular juncture, my show is listened to in all kinds of different quarters. It's monitored every Friday by the usual suspects. And I can just calculate on the basis of the way these guys troll me whether or not they really were irritated and hated the show. And the more of them that hated, of course, the better I feel, which is kind of a perverse relationship with at least a percentage of my listeners. But it is Valentine's Day, and on this wonderful day in 1992, my last long-haired dachshund was born. And I had that wonderful dog for about 15 years. That's another story for another broadcast. But Eddie Arnold has brought us again to this portion of the show. And so we talk about what I think needs to be the context of Dr. Robertson Jenness's article in the Current Culture Wars of February 2025. And it's only part one. It's entitled Prophecy, the Jews, and the Antichrist. And so we turn briefly to task and purpose today. For those of you who don't know Task and Purpose, it is a publication with close ties to the establishment, the American military establishment. Some of the articles are quite interesting in it. Some of the other ones I tend not to bother with. But here's one that was sent to me today by the Task and Purpose people. Listen to this one just for a minute. Task and Purpose has a title which indicates that the majority of troops and military families in the United States military now believe large-scale war is on the horizon. This was as the result of a survey. Task and Purpose, we got a link to that in the roadmap, so you can actually read the article, see who did the survey. But the point is that according to this survey, 83% of active duty families and 67% of Americans generally anticipate that the United States is going to be involved in a major conflict with the next in the next 3 to 5 years. I don't necessarily believe that we have that long to wait, but I'm not God. I don't know. Maybe it is 3 to 5 years, but make no mistake about it. I am not alone, along with my other friends in the true alt-right, in suspecting that we are headed for the unforeseen in regard to a level of global conflict that Donald Trump, notwithstanding, is likely to engulf the American population as well as the world, perhaps sooner than we think. So this then moves us into the Dr. Robertson Jenness article, which you have a link to, and that is due to the generosity of Dr. E. Michael Jones, the editor of Culture Wars up in South Bend, Indiana. But this article, and I will try to get through at least some of it before the end of the hour, it has headlines like the, or subtitles like the Duality of MAGA, The Quest for Greater Israel, Tucker Carlson's Interview of Sachs, The Scofield Reference Bible Begins Christian Zionism, and last but not least, especially important for you who are Roman Catholics out there, The Catholic Contribution to Christian Zionism. That is a fascinating thing, largely post-Vatican II, but Dr. Sengenis duly notes this. At the same time that I would say that the Lutheran Church, which should know better on this whole subject of dispensational premillennialism and Christian Zionism, seems to be, with the exception of some of the Lutheran pietist sects out there in the middle of a cornfield in South Dakota or something, it has a traditional amillennial eschatology, but nonetheless, there are at least a few Lutherans out there who are dispensationalists. They are not true to their own church's confessions. But in the case of Lutherans that I have known, they largely are uninterested in looking into this or find themselves being pro-Israel simply because of the impact of the American news media and American culture on them, without giving any thought to whether or not this particular position is biblical and whether or not this particular position is leading our kids and our country into something that need not happen, that's absolutely disastrous, and it's beyond disastrous, it's evil. So Sengenis begins, The Duality of MAGA, Make America Great Again. After the election of Donald Trump, Sengenis says, many Christians find themselves between a rock and a hard place. On the one hand, Trump's victory made sure the feminist ultra-liberal Kamala Harris and all her leftist entourage will not be allowed to harm this country with woke culture, open borders, warmongering, inflation, overspending, and gender confusion. On the other hand, says Sengenis, as Trump brings with him those on the right who appear to be decent people who believe in quote-unquote God, family, and country, it is the country part of that equation that is off kilter. For most MAGA people, says Sengenis, country doesn't mean only America, but Israel as well. As in fact, he says, we might say that the God part of the equation is also off kilter. Although the Bible says that God is quote-unquote no respecter of persons, Romans 2, 9 through 11, the MAGA camp has a much higher respect and special affection for Israel than any other country, especially the many American Jews who have dual citizenship in the current and previous administrations. Emphasis on current as well as previous administrations. Most of the MAGA crowd, says Sengenis, is associated directly or indirectly with Fox News, which makes up the loudest speaking voice for the 75 million evangelical Christians who live in the United States, the largest block of Christians by far. The Catholic Church, which has 62 million members in the United States, has about 50% of them that side with MAGA and some Israel. So although the cliche that one should not engage in conversations about religion or politics is often true, the 2024 election has made a most curious marriage of the two ever seen in the United States. The religion supports the politics, and the politics supports the religion, at least for the Christians who are now running the show and from which Trump selected many of his cabinet picks. Without the evangelicals, Sungenis reminds us, Trump would never have been elected. It has gotten to the point, listen to this one, folks, it has gotten to the point that the U.S. and Israel are so connected at the hip that 20,000 American citizens fight in the Israeli Defense Force. And Bill H.R. 8445, look this one up, folks. Bill H.R. 8445, introduced in May of 2024, hopes to give them legal and possibly tax relief. For other conservatives who are MAGA-minded but not Israel-minded, and in fact find many of Israel's policies against the Palestinians tyrannical and immoral, just as the rest of the world has, they find themselves between the rock of Donald Trump and the hard place of Israel. It's one thing to accept Trump's economic and social policies, which seem to benefit most people, says Sungenis. It's quite another to be corralled to accept the evangelical Israel ideology that coincides with many of Trump's policies. The next subdivision of this article is entitled The Quest for Greater Israel. This unique combination of religion and politics is commonly called Christian Zionism, quote-unquote, which is the next step up from the older and broader term entitled Judeo-Christianity, quote-unquote, whereas the latter term encompasses the Jewish people as at least being the ground from which Christianity arose. Thus, there should be mutual religious camaraderie between the two religions. The former became not only a political religious term for Christians in favor of Jews, but a demographical and geographical term for Christians, helping to facilitate the return of the Jews to the Promised Land as a fulfillment of Old Testament prophecy. In fact, says Sungenis, these prophecies are said to include not only Palestine, but what is known as quote-unquote Greater Israel. That is all the land between the Nile and Euphrates River, which is the same land the Jews occupied in the days of David and Solomon, when Israel was at its apex and was taking in 666 talents of gold per annum from the surrounding nations, which in today's figures is close to $2 billion per year. Today, says Sungenis, maps of Greater Israel are depicted on Israeli coinage, such as the 100-shekel coin. The 75-shekel anniversary coin for 1948 to 2023 has only the whole land of Palestine, which confirms the testimony of an Israeli youth advocate by the name of Simon Zimmerman, that Greater Israel, at least in its first phase, refers only to the whole of Palestine and not east to the Euphrates. Holding up a map she drew, she then stated, okay, here's the good stuff. More maps of Greater Israel. That's just sort of the whole land. We were always taught that the whole land is ours. I mean, you know, that's sort of what they teach you, unquote. The depiction, says Sungenis, of the larger Greater Israel appears on the sewn patches that Israeli soldiers put on their upper left arm. Take a look at this. There's a photograph of this. There's a sketch of it, folks, online in this article. The three Hebrew words on the patch translate in English to Land of Israel Promised, quote unquote. This dream started with David Ben-Gurion, Israel's first prime minister, when he hinted at expanding the borders for Israel beyond Palestine. According to Jewish historian Noam Chomsky in his book Pirates and Emperors, quote, David Ben-Gurion, while in power, never lost sight of his ultimate aim of expanding to the limits of Zionist aspirations, quote unquote, including much of the surrounding countries and on some occasions the quote-unquote biblical borders from the Nile to Iraq, while the native population would somehow be transferred, unquote. That Ben-Gurion might start and end his vision by conquest is noted, says Sungenis, by historian Shalem Avi. Quote, the new historian says that David Ben-Gurion, rather than representing a consensus, was the driving force behind Israel's policies in 1948, in particular the policy of expelling the Palestinians, unquote. Indeed, Ben-Gurion's May 14, 1948 speech, accepting the 1947 UN Charter, says Sungenis is filled with statements that Israel is obtaining the land by divine right, not merely because other nations want to help dispersed Jews. In any case, the greater Israel land acquisition includes the following. In the south, the whole Sinai Peninsula and northern Egypt. To the east, Jordan, Kuwait, and up the Euphrates River to Iraq, Syria, Turkey, and Lebanon. Essentially all of the land from the Nile River to the Euphrates River. Obviously, this land grab, says Sungenis, would necessitate either the removal of the Arabs presently occupying that land or their total subjugation to Israeli rule. Now, fascinatingly enough, then, the next section of the article that Sungenis gives us here, which is going to be available to you online in your roadmap, deals with Tucker Carlson's interview of Sachs. Here, Sungenis says that having 95% of the land of Palestine from the 50% Israel was given in the 1947 United Nations Charter, which means Israel forcefully took the other 45%, the quest for greater Israel continues today. The recent downfall of Bashar al-Assad in Syria is one such fallen domino. Assad's removal started in 2011. Now listen to this, folks, entirely factual. It started in 2011 when Barack Obama, through what is called Operation Timber Sycamore, told the CIA to topple him. According to a recent interview by Tucker Carlson with Jeffrey Sachs, the Jewish Columbia professor of economics and a foreign policy advisor to many presidents, Israel is presently run by Benjamin Netanyahu, who Sachs calls, quote-unquote, one of the most delusional and dangerous people on the planet, does not intend to take greater Israel by slow incursion and intermittent peace negotiations, but by continual war using the United States as his proxy. As Sachs revealed, quote, in the last year, Hamas wanted to make peace with Israel. Ismail Haniyeh was Hamas's political negotiator. In July 2024, Israel assassinated him. Next, Hassan Nasrallah of Hezbollah wanted to make peace with Israel. In September of 2024, Israel assassinated him also. Sachs believes that it is the same reason that Yitzhak Rabin, Israel's fifth prime minister, was murdered in Tel Aviv on November the 4th, 1995, at a rally for the Oslo Peace Accords. As it appears, says Sachs, anyone who advocates peace will be removed. In 2002, the Arab Peace Initiative was proposed by the Arab nations, but it was ignored by the U.S. and Israel. Sachs adds that, quote, even Iran has been asking the Biden administration for peace for the last 2 years, unquote, with no response from Sleepy Joe. But we would never know of Iran's request from the Zionist-controlled American media. Why? According to Sachs, quote, Israel doesn't want peace, they want primacy, unquote, and the only way to get it is by conquest. When Assad fell, Netanyahu's response was not sprinkled with condolences, but, quote, we have remade the Middle East, unquote, similar to what he said at Bar Ilban University in Israel years after 9/11 occurred, namely, quote, we are benefiting from one thing, and that is the attack on the Twin Towers in the Pentagon and the American struggle in Iraq. These events swung American opinion in our favor, unquote. As Jewish physician and author Gor Mate said in a recent interview, I completely agree with Netanyahu. The light will triumph over the darkness. He's just a bit confused as to what represents light and darkness. He's one of the darkest minds on the world stage right now. What you're seeing there is a person so alienated from humanity, so committed to his ego that, as they say in Hungarian, whatever he says, not even the opposite is true. And yeah, Bibi, the light will triumph despite whatever you can do. And you have a lot of power to impose a lot of suffering. And you will, because that's your nature. That's what you're committed to. Unquote. Sungenis reminds us that this is part of Israel's 30-year plan, which started in 1996 with Operation Clean Break. A clean break from previous dove-like efforts to give Israel its promised land. In 2001, General Wesley Clark, remember him, folks, the head of NATO, said that after 9/11, he was told that the U.S.-Israeli plan was to dethrone seven countries in the Middle East: Lebanon, Syria, Iraq, Libya, Somalia, Sudan, and Iran, all of which were Israel's real or presumed enemies. In 2002, says Sungenis, Netanyahu made a deal with the U.S. under Bush and the neocons to initiate the plan, starting with Iraq by using the weapons of mass destruction excuse, after Netanyahu and Colin Powell swore at the UN that Iraq was going to blow up the world. By 2011, Sungenis reminds us, Obama and Hillary saw to it that Lebanon, Libya, Somalia, and Sudan were either toppled or in the crosshairs, and which now stand as little more than burned-out war zones. That makes, Sungenis reminds us, six out of the seven nations that have been laid to waste to make a pathway for greater Israel at a cost of $7 trillion for the United States, one-fifth of the U.S. total running debt. Iran is the only one left, and as sure as Bob's your uncle, says Sungenis, Netanyahu and his warmongering Zionists are continuing to clamor for a preemptive strike. What they didn't see coming, however, is that Iran now has Russia and China as its allies, so good luck with that. In the midst of all this land grab, says Sungenis, Christian Zionists think that they have a mandate from God to cause, quote, the Battle of Armageddon, unquote, reasoning that it is their duty to push the red button since God is on their side and thus can't lose even a nuclear war. As Sachs describes the United States' support of Israel's so-called manifest destiny, quote, we have a lot of rhetoric in this country standing up for Israel, quote, unquote. We are engaging in war on Israel's behalf all over the Middle East. We are defending, says Sachs, someone who has a 7th century B.C. vision of what they want their country to be, unquote. Since the 7th century B.C. was when the Jews came back from 70 years in Babylonian captivity to rebuild Jerusalem, perhaps Sachs meant the 15th century B.C., the time Israel came out of Egypt and under Joshua and Caleb took over the nations of Canaan, or Palestine today. Whatever the case, Sachs has pinpointed what is driving Netanyahu and the Christian Zionists today, and what was driving David Ben-Gurion 70 years ago, and why Menachem Begin and Ariel Sharon, who were leaders in the Stern Gang and Irgun militia of 1947 that began displacing the Palestinian population to make more room for Israel under orders from Ben-Gurion, thought of themselves as the quote-unquote new Joshua and Caleb, designed to fulfill Old Testament prophecies of giving the promised land to Israel. Begin and Sharon said they were merely following the Hebrew principle of Sharem, transliterated as utter destruction, from passages like Deuteronomy 20, verses 16 through 18, quote, you shall not leave a single soul alive, you must doom them all. Now, in a few minutes that remain, I want to cover just a little bit of what Sungenis talks about in the next section of this article, the Scofield Reference Bible. Those of you who have been brought up on this, those of you who have not been told historically what a recent development it is, need to focus on this point in this article. Noam Chomsky, Sungenis reminds us, stated in a recent forum, why does the United States support Israel, where there's a history, and a very interesting one that actually goes back a long time? One thing to remember is that Christian Zionism is a very powerful force, which goes back long before Jewish Zionism. In England particularly, Christian Zionism was a powerful force among British elites. It's part of the motivation for the Balfour Declaration and for Britain's support for the Jewish colonization of Israel. Remember, quote-unquote, the Bible said. That's a big part of British elite culture. The same in the United States. Woodrow Wilson was a devout Christian who read the Bible every day, says Chomsky. I'll accept that at face value. So did Harry Truman. That definitely impacted Harry's outlook on using these atomic weapons against Japan when they already wanted to surrender. And in the Roosevelt administration, one of the leading officials, Harold Ickes, once described the return of the Jews to Palestine as the greatest event in history. For America's Christian Zionists, Sungenis reminds us, this movement started largely at the turn of the 20th century, beginning with the 1909 edition of the Scofield Reference Bible, which was published at the Jewish-owned Oxford University Press in England. Consider that one for a minute, folks. And eventually grew into a gargantuan religious movement in which conservative Protestant seminaries and churches were coerced into accepting the dispensational theology of John Nelson Darby and Cyrus Scofield. For those interested, Scofield has quite a controversial history, says Sungenis, which is told in detail in The Incredible Scofield and His Book, which I have read. One other thing here, as we go through this section of this, which I don't have the time to read in its entirety, take a look at the number of people who have been impacted by Scofield, Billy Graham, Frank Gebelein, Carl F. H. Henry, John Walvoord, Louis Berry Schaeffer, Charles Ryrie, the list goes on, developed an even more intense literal interpretation of Old Testament prophecy. Don't believe that? Go back and listen to Franklin Graham's prayer at this Trump inauguration. Listen to that with intense interest in regard to the themes underscored in Franklin Graham's prayer, which were later reiterated in the Jewish form by the rabbi who is the president of Yeshiva University in the United States. But when we read through all of this, there is absolutely no question that in conjunction with Sungenis' book, you may profit by reading my online essay on dispensationalism and Daniel's Prophecy of 70 Weeks that was penned for Westminster Theological Seminary quite a number of years ago now. There is a very, very important piece that appeared in the Evangelical Theological Society journal of some years ago, which I will get up this weekend on the roadmap. It deals with one William E. Blackstone, the father not only of Christian Zionism, but some would say of Zionism itself. Now, what is the point of all of this? As we close, we get back to task and purpose. 83% of American active duty military think that they're going to be going into a major war in the next 3 to 5 years. 67% of the American public, according to this poll of Task and Purpose, believes that. What are we going to go to war for? For the Scofield Reference Bible and for Benjamin Netanyahu and for the Temple Mount movement, which will rebuild a temple to be occupied by the Antichrist? Think about it, folks. It's closer than you think. See you next week, and I'll add to the roadmap this weekend. God bless you.
Health Simple with Colorado Shieldji. Fact bit number one. What goes in must come out. Whatever we ingest, breathe in, or transfer by contact must be expelled. Expelled directly as burned calories, through perspiration, respiration, or expelled via urinary and gastric channels. Every element that is not properly used or removed by our bodies become toxins. And toxins, as we know, are causal to every disease and ailment. Toxins are what makes us subpar, unable to be at our best. Be your healthy best by cleansing your body of daily and deeply embedded toxins. Live stronger, and we hope live longer. Shilajit, legit Shilajit, that is, like Colorado Shilajit, is perhaps the greatest homeopathic whole body remover of toxins made by Mother Earth.
Look for the gold mountain and medical symbol logo in banners on republicbroadcasting.org to watch the full video and see more information. Use code GORBN when ordering. That's GORBN.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.